Hungry for spicy food and even hotter conversations? Craving community and authentic storytelling? Then join the table. This is Minor Legends, a new comedy fiction podcast supported by Potluck. Pull up every week with me, Angela Wong Carbone, and follow the stories of me and my friends as we serve up tasty tales of what it means to be Asian American at our weekly dinner hang. If you enjoy deep dishing on absurd stereotypes like tiger moms who tutor your dating game rather than grades, the insanity of your parents' immigration story, to the legend of that one good Asian cousin you can never live up to, then pull up a seat and grab a plate. Featuring dinner guests like Ronnie Chang, Brian Park, Usama Siddiqui, Celia Au, Perry Young, Supriya Ganesh, and more. It's a tasty rotation that'll leave you belly laughing and steeped in relatable and spicy conversations. Can you take the heat? Listen now for free wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to
Whoa!
Potluck.
And hey, welcome to Books and Boba, a book club and podcast featuring books by Asian and Asian American authors. My name is Marvin Yue.
And I'm Rira Yu.
And we are here for our October 2025 mid-month book news check-in, where we go over some of the latest Asian American-related book and publishing news. Rira, how is your October going? How is your spooky month this year?
Well, it's finally cold enough to wear a sweatshirt, so I'm very excited about it finally being fall weather.
There's a caveat there, though. It's cool enough for now because it's warming up again this weekend, which
I'm just happy that I can wear a cardigan around my house and pretend that it's cold enough to drink like hot cocoa and get all cozy.
Yeah, I mean, we did have a little bit of rain earlier this week and the temperature did drop to like typical fall weather. So we had like a little glimpse of what life used to be, because I think I mentioned this before on this podcast, but when I was a kid growing up here in LA, we had like a rainy fall season and a rainy spring season. I was looking at a picture of a friend get together like 2004. We had like a high school reunion type thing at a pho restaurant in like early October, and everyone was wearing jackets. And you know how like LA people are like already pansies when it comes to like just a little bit of cold. So just like,
my friends were telling my New Yorker friends were telling me how like I've become weak because I get cold like very easily. And I'm like, no, you don't understand. Like there's a difference between like t-shirt weather and like a light cardigan weather and a sweatshirt weather. If you don't have the right layer, it really messes with you. Whereas like in the East Coast, like everybody just wears like a thick sweater or a jacket. Like it doesn't even matter because it's always going to be a consistent cold.
Yeah, I think you're right, because you know, when I was living on the East Coast too, it's like, you know, you have like a few like big jackets for like when you're going outside in the cold. But when you're indoors, it's like the heaters is always blasting. And the thing with being on the West Coast or in California at least, is like we don't really have a lot of like temperature control. I mean, we have some AC, but in terms of like warmth, like we rarely throw on the heater, even when it gets cold.
Yeah. Well, it's just like you become more sensitive to like the different degrees in temperature. Like 2 degrees really makes a difference. And also to my New Yorker friends, dry cold weather is very different from wet cold weather. Like I would rather be in the snow and like suffer that versus like like walking around LA when it's like what 50 degrees in like those rare times when it like drops to a point where it's actually cold, it's dry wind, it feels a lot colder than it actually is. I don't know, like I've experienced both types of weather, and West Coast chill is very different from East Coast chill.
Yeah. I have memories of waking up early to go to work and having to like defrost my windshield. And I don't think I've had to do that for a while now.
Okay. Let me just say, when I was living in New York, We actually had to open our window for our bedroom because it would get so hot with like the indoor heating, and we didn't have any control over that. And like it got to a point where it was just like, yeah, it's not even that bad when we go outside. So
yeah.
So I'm not a weakling. I've just become more sensitive to different fluctuations in temperature.
That is to say, you know, like everywhere is different. Let's all have a little grace for everybody. I think that's the whole point of like our book club as well. It's just like, you know, having different perspectives and living different people's shoes, it makes us all better, more empathetic people in the long run. And that's still something that we believe in. Anyways, happy spooky month to all who celebrate. I'm very excited because it's my first Halloween with my kids, my twins, and we are still trying to figure out what to dress them as.
What do you mean you're still trying to figure it out, Marvin? Like, Halloween is in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And it's not like they sell baby costumes, like, in the right measurements for your kids.
But
it's
it
not
is like their first Halloween, costume. So we're being very, like, I don't know, very indecisive on what cute outfits to put them in. But, you know, we'll talk more about this on Boba Chats. I'll let you know. Hopefully by then we'll have made a decision to share with our Honey Boba members. But speaking of our Honey Boba members, Books and Boba is supported in part by our listeners. So if you've been enjoying our podcast and want to become a bigger part of our book club, head on over to patreon.com/booksandboba, where as an official Patreon supporter, you can access to our members only Discord server, where you can chat with us and fellow book club members about various topics, including our book club picks, in real time. And if you join us at the aforementioned Honey Boba level, you also gain access to our monthly bonus podcast Boba Chats, where in our next episode we will be judging the costume I choose for my twins for their first Halloween, as well as the opportunity to help us pick a quarterly book club pick, which this month's book club pick, Bat Eater and Other Names for Cora Zhang, was a patron's choice as well. So definitely appreciate everyone who has supported us so far and hope to see more of you there in the future. But let's get into it. We didn't do book news last month because of various reasons. So this month we're doing a little bit of catch up. We may have missed some publishing announcements. So if there's anything that you were particularly excited about that we did not cover, please let us know on Discord or on Goodreads, and we'll make sure to give it a shout out on our next episode.
Yeah, I tried my best. I tried my best. I was out of commission. I did not have the bandwidth to do book news last month with everything that was happening.
You're moving, so like that is.
I was moving. I still am moving. It's a lot. All right. So our first book deal is, in a 2-book deal, Summit acquired world English rights to Radiance by Ayad Akhtar. When a hit and run shatters more than his body, a writer is caught between revelation and madness as an uncanny pull toward a brilliant colleague ensnares him in a scandal that threatens to destroy them both in this novel of spiritual transformation in an age of fracture. Publication is planned for October 2026.
There's a lot of big words in this book.
It's an adult book.
Announcement. Yeah.
We're so used to announcing like children's books that it's like, oh, wait. Like vocabulary.
Yeah, but it's kind of giving like misery vibes. And I'm not sure if it's supposed to be giving misery vibes, but definitely like the fact that like it's a writer who I have a feeling is out of commission because of a car crash. It definitely gives like do you remember the spooky month read we did a couple years ago, The Hole? Kind of gives those vibes as well, right? So I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Because the Radiance doesn't sound like a horror psychological thriller. But the description definitely has like some of those vibes, right?
Yeah, it does sound a little sinister with the brilliant colleague that puts them in a scandal, because it's like, oh, who do you trust when your body is pretty much broken and you're in a very vulnerable position? So, yeah, I can see it being a little bit unsettling as like a thriller novel.
Yeah, well, congrats to Ayad for their book deal. All right, next up, Henry Holt has acquired In a Preempt, Mariko Turk's YA rom-com The Museum of Modern Love, about a hopeless romantic named Miki Kawamura who plans to confess her love for her best friend Auden on an overnight tour of the Metropolitan Museum of Art, the same tour that made her grandparents fall in love in 1965, until Miki's disaster ex-fling shows up and takes Auden's place. Publication is set for fall 2026. Museum rom-com, is this a genre that you're into?
No, not at all. Like... I love museums. I really do. And like one of my favorite things to do during like the weekends when I was still going to school in New York was to like visit the Met and visit like a lot of the smaller galleries. But I wouldn't want to go on a date with someone like at a museum. I like to observe things like on my own. And I feel like another person's energy just kind of disrupts this.
Really? Because I feel like a museum is like a go-to place for like a date because it's like...
Yeah, yeah. I heard that it's a very like common first date venue for people. And I'm like, I could never.
I don't know, first date. Maybe like a place like the Broad, which is like modern art with like kind of like, you know, is there for photo ops and stuff. That's kind of fun. But like a like an art museum, I feel like... Unless the goal is to suss out whether or not your date can be an intellectual, you know, equal to you or something. But that's also feels a little pretentious, right?
Well, also like, you know, people observe things at like a different pace. And I tend to like kind of like look at things very quickly and then like make another loop around. So it's just like I'm very specific about this. But anyway,
yeah.
An overnight tour at the Met sounds pretty cool. I would not want an ex-fling to show up in like a very romantic setting like that. So
sounds like a nightmare and great fodder for a romantic comedy. So yeah, sounds fun.
All right. So our next book deal is at auction. First, second bought Sir Silly. Gavin Ong Thon's three-book young reader graphic novel series about a silly goose who dreams of becoming a knight. Publication of the first book is planned for 2027.
I mean, sounds cute.
Geese are kind of... Geese scare me. Gooses. Geese. Yeah.
Geese. Yeah, I mean, geese are jerks. They are the jerks of the bird world. You don't want to mess with geese. If, you know, if you find one as you're feeding ducks at the park, just steer clear, because especially your children, because they can get quite aggressive. But a silly goose, on the other hand, sounds delightful, especially one who wants to become a knight. I wonder if this will be kind of like a Amelia Bedelia type situation where it's like a bumbling silly goose who doesn't understand human things, or maybe they're just like a Don Quixote who has like...
I was about to say, this is giving Don Quixote vibes, right? Yeah.
Yeah. It sounds fun. And in my scale of would I get this graphic novel for my kids? Yes. Yes, I would give them a book about a silly goose who wants to become a knight.
This is a sidebar, but I remember reading an article a long time ago where a prison replaced all of their guard dogs with geese because they're so aggressive and so loud. So anytime like a prisoner gets a little bit too close to like the gates, the fences, like the geese will like chase after them and be like, ah.
That is pretty nefarious. So if Sir Silly's nightly dreams don't work out, he can always be a prison guard.
Yeah.
All right. Our next book deal. Beaming Books had bought world English rights to Emily Minji Makes Kimchi, written by Meredith Sung-mi Buse and illustrated by Jen Kashmirsky. The picture book is about a girl adopted from Korea who makes her own kimchi to connect with herself, her identity, and her culture. Publication is planned for spring 2027.
Yo, making your own kimchi is so much hard work. It's not meant for one person, which I guess it's kind of like part of the story, I'm guessing, because it's a big family activity. All the women get together and have like a big tub and put in all the vegetables and seasoning. It's a lot of work.
Do you have like a family recipe that you have you made your own kimchi? I mean,
a long time ago with like my grandma and like my mom, but I don't really like kimchi all that much except for pagamchi, which is like green onion kimchi.
Mm.
And that doesn't require like that much fermenting or anything.
Yeah, my mother-in-law makes a quick kimchi, a quick cabbage kimchi. That's pretty good. But...
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of like the regular like cabbage kimchi. When we think of kimchi, like that's like the first thing that pops up. I don't really like that type of kimchi unless it's like cooked into dishes.
Oh.
If it's just, you know, a side dish, then I tend to not eat it.
So you like super tart and sour in your...
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's also like the radish kimchis that are like cut into cubes. I prefer those when I'm eating it with soup. And by itself, I'm just like, no, it's not the same. So I'm very picky when it comes to eating kimchi. But this sounds really cute. And yeah, like more stories about adoptee experiences for younger readers. That's always great to see.
And I hope it also comes with like a kimchi recipe or like a how-to guide so that you can make kimchi at home too with your family. That'd be fun.
Also exhausting. It's a lot of, you think that it won't require that much manual labor, but it requires a lot of manual labor. Just warning you. All right. So next up, Penguin's imprint, Nancy Paulson Books, acquired world rights to The River of Caregiving by Jocelyn Chung and illustrated by Sarah Gonzalez. The picture book is about the many ways different generations of a family care for one another and how caregiving flows like a river connecting them all. Publication is set for summer 2026. This sounds really sweet because I feel like caregiving is something that has been really underappreciated in this day and age, especially when nuclear families are like so emphasized.
Yeah, and definitely something that is pretty ingrained in like at least East Asian culture. But at the same time, you know, it also like caregiving in terms of like, you know, in Confucian societies can also take on like a very toxic connotation. Doesn't seem like this is what the direction this book is taking. It does sound like a sweet, like, this is how we care for each other, which I think is a good message because there are way more mixed families these days. And it just, we want to see people take care of family and friends and people and loved ones and like kind of feel like they, not because they have to, but because it's like, it's what you do as a community.
Yeah, I feel like caregiving, you can do things in really small ways, small, meaningful ways, like a grandparent walking their grandchild to school or, you know, cooking extra meals for extended family members or for like really tired parents. So, yeah, it sounds like a really sweet book that we probably need in this day and age of individualism.
Yeah. All right. Next up. Dial Press has bought at auction North American rights to award-winning children's book author Shirim Yim Leo's adult debut of Wind and Dust. The book is a braided historical epic about three women, one born married, one born enslaved, and one born free, all wives of the same man in 19th century China and in emerging Seattle, all striving for autonomy and love. Publication is planned for early 2027. Speaking of Confucian societies and, you know, the role of women in those, I feel like we've read a couple books recently that kind of touches on this practice of like taking multiple wives in like Chinese culture, especially in the 19th and early 20th centuries. And yeah, it's kind of, I feel like stories of like women's struggles it's kind of core to a lot of like Asian American literature. Like a lot of our early years classics are about this topic, but I feel like there's a lot more authors kind of taking like, let's explore these stories, but like with other, you know, circumstances, other perspectives that isn't necessarily just like mothers and daughters and things like that, right?
Yeah. And I also love that this is a story about like women finding autonomy in a time when they didn't really have much freedom at all, considering that one of them was literally born enslaved. Like human trafficking was a thing back then as well. Probably not in the ways that we think human trafficking is today, but
I mean, back then, right? Daughters were seen as, you know, bargaining chips, collateral, right? Like they're meant for building relationships, being family. But you know, the fact that like one of them was born married means that they were betrothed before they were even born, right?
That's... Yeah, I mean, or like engaged. Like it's kind of weird. I am curious as to like what that means. And yeah, it's interesting that this takes place also in Seattle, because when it comes to like Asian American stories that take place during that like 19th century era, I don't really see Seattle as like a common, like it's usually San Francisco, yeah. LA, like the East Coast. So yeah, this is a new setting for us.
Yeah, I'm curious what early Seattle looks like, especially for Chinese Americans.
Yeah, especially for Chinese Americans. All right. So our next book deal is Lerner Carol Rhoda Lab bought Project Junie, a YA novel in verse by debut author Caitlin San Miguel. When the latest explosive fight with her boyfriend leaves Junalyn Legaspi shaken, she embarks on a dangerous solo rock climb to unpack her toxic relationship, her strained sisterhood, and the long-term impact of the COVID pandemic of her life. Publication is planned for spring 2027.
I don't think I would ever do a solo rock climb. It just, I'm too old and also like not good enough to attempt one of those. But it does sound like, you know, this could either be a story of personal triumph or like a horror story, right? There's a lot of horror stories involving climbing up.
What was that movie? 127 hours?
That was a dude hiking who fell into a hole. But there was that other film, Climb, about people who got stuck up like a radar tower or like an antenna tower. That was like more of like a psychological thriller horror film. I don't think that's the direction this is going. This sounds like one of the personal triumph angle, but there is something about like doing something like to push yourself physically to the limit to break through your mental limits, right?
Yeah, and I'm curious about the long-term impact of the COVID. Like, is it a health impact? Like, does she have long COVID, or is it just that COVID has made her relationships strained because we had to do like lockdown and isolation? So could be a lot of things.
Yeah, I feel like that's kind of like it's an interesting aspect that I feel like a lot of modern stories will be exploring for years to come, which is like the effect of like, what does 2 years in isolation do to a person, you know, 5, 6, even 10 years down the line? Like, we're already seeing the effects of it on kids who like came of age during that time. And I'm sure it's going to be like a topic that a lot of books, movies, films, TV shows will explore in the years to come, right?
Yeah, I think we read a few books that took place like after COVID or during COVID, but it was like the front and center like theme of it all. So I wonder if this book is going to put COVID more as like a theme in the book, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Well, congrats to Caitlin on her book deal. All right. Next up, HarperCollins has acquired at auctions Medusa's Pet Rock, a picture book by Steph Lau. When it's Medusa's turn to take the class pet home, she tries to be careful, but inevitably zap. Medusa's teachers won't give up, though, and she's sure that this time she's found a class pet that even Medusa can enjoy. Publication is planned for fall 2026, and also part of the deal is a second untitled mythology-based picture book for Steph Lau.
This is pretty funny, like, because, yeah, you know, everyone kind of knows the myth of Medusa, the Gorgon that turns people into stone when you meet her gaze. And it's like, hey, what's one thing that you can't turn into a rock? A rock, a pet rock. Very clever of the teacher. But
I also like the framing of Medusa as the protagonist, right? Someone that the kids can root for. Like, oh, she has this, you know, functionally a disability that like makes her unable to do like things other people can. So let's find a solution for her to enjoy what it's like to have a pet without having to worry about petrifying it.
Yeah. I wonder if it works for plants. Probably not. It has to have like a
It
has to have eyes for it too.
Yeah. But then plenty of people raised plants as pets during the pandemic. So sometimes plants are even harder to raise than animals.
I know there's like a specific type of rock plant. It looks like moss, and you put it in water and it just like grows over time. So I wonder if the pet rock is...
Is that like a chia pet or...
But it's like put into terrariums. Like, okay. It's an actual living thing, but it's a rock. So yeah. I wonder if the rock in the story is something similar to that, where it's like, it's living, but you can't turn it into, you can't petrify it because it's already a rock.
That's true. And I'm sure there's like other animals that don't need eyes to see.
Yeah.
Or don't see. Yeah.
Like moles.
That's true.
They're already blind, so I guess they can't be true. Yeah. We're getting a little bit too deep into this, but I am curious about this second mythology-based picture book. Like, there's so many myths that you can pick from.
Yeah. Like, what other mythology-based, like, monster needs some children's book redemption?
I mean, Medusa, depending on which story you read, she is a victim and not the monster.
Yeah.
And, yeah. Yeah. So congratulations to Steph on their book deal. All right, next up, Knopf acquired world rights to Chrysanthemum's Glow, written by Livia Blackburn and illustrated by Julia Kuo. The book is a tall tale about the chrysanthemum's journey from China to America and a mother and daughter's ode to hope in dark times. Publication is set for fall 2027.
Chrysanthemum is a word that, like, I dread reading out loud. It's appeared a few times in our book deals over the years. I'm always like,
yeah, because it's an Asian flower.
So yeah, like, I hope I don't get it this time. But yeah, I mean, chrysanthemums are, like you mentioned, like, it's an Asian flower, and it's
used in tea.
Yeah, I love a good chrysanthemum tea.
We dread this word on this podcast. Yeah. You guys don't know how many times I had to redo the take because I kept messing up.
And good luck to all the parents reading this book to their kids, because I'm sure chrysanthemum appears like on every single page. But it does seem like a pretty, you know, I don't know if sweet's the right word, but, you know, it's a story about the flower being a symbol of a mother and daughter going through hard times. I wonder if this is like a period story. It kind of feels like a period story, right?
Yeah, it kind of does. I mean, it's a story about the chrysanthemum's journey as an immigrant. Like, how did it go from China to America? It is a Chinese flower, which is kind of strange to think about, because like Japan's like imperial seal is the chrysanthemum. So I'm like, okay, like it's made its trip around Asian countries and made their mark. So
yeah, and you know, on the scale of would I read this book to my kids, I would, because it does feel like a story worth, you know, sharing with my children. But I would be dreading every page where the word chrysanthemum pops up. I think I just need to practice enunciating this word.
Is there a Chinese like name for it? Maybe you can like switch it over to
I think it's Zhuhua.
What is it called in Chinese?
Is it Zhuhua? Let me actually look it up. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. That's really funny, because I looked it up in Korean too, and it's Kukhua. So it's similar.
Yeah. I know it's Zhuhua because when I go to dim sum, sometimes we order Zhuhua Ta, which is chrysanthemum tea, which, you know, it pairs pretty nicely with dim sum dishes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is delicious, but very hard to pronounce.
All right. Our next book deal, in a two-book deal, Del Rey has picked up North American rights to YA author Elizabeth Lim's adult debut novel, Fishbone Cinderella. The book is a family saga with a shimmer of magic that tells the intertwined stories of a mother and daughter in 1940s Hong Kong and 1960s San Francisco. The book is set to release in 2026.
Elizabeth Lim is the author of Spin the Dawn and Six Crimson Cranes. So, very exciting to hear that they are writing an adult novel based on a fairy tale.
Yeah.
Because Chinese Cinderella is different from
French Cinderella. I'm trying to, like, I don't have, like, you know, growing up in the diaspora, we get most of our folk tales from Disney, right? So I'm trying to remember what the specific Chinese version of this story, because there is, like, you know, like, they're not the same folktales, but each culture, a lot of cultures have similar stories about, you know, like women who, you know, overcome difference in rank to find their one true love and stuff like that. I know there's a Korean version as well, right?
Yeah, there is a Korean version, and it's nothing like the French version. It is like, there's like a series of tasks that Cinderella has to do, and like little animals help her for each task. So there's like a task where she has to fill up this ginormous Korean jar with water, and there's like a crack at the bottom, and it's like, oh, you can never finish this task. But then a toad helps her by clogging up the crack in the hangari, the Korean jar. So
this sounds like
very very different.
Yeah, we've been reading a lot of books that takes place during this time period from a lot of authors, not just talking about like Japanese occupied China and Hong Kong, but also Japanese occupied Korea and other places. And it really does feel like a lot of authors are taking the time to, you know, learn about their family history, learning about, you know, this time period, and just letting it inspire their writing to tell stories about this era, which is, you know, it's a part of history that obviously we don't cover in our American education, our American history education, but also as like diaspora, we don't really, you know, we're not really taught this growing up as well, because it's part of a history that a lot of our grandparents, a lot of our parents just don't want to bring up, right? Because it's a dark time in their history.
Yeah. And it's up to the new gen to be nosy and to dig through that history to make sure that it sees the light of day. So
yeah,
congratulations to Elizabeth Lim on their adult debut novel. Sounds very like I have faith in Elizabeth, because I have heard so many great things about her YA books. They're simply like magical, and the covers are gorgeous, by the way. So yeah. I'm very tempted to pick up her previous works.
We do need to read one of her books for book club at some point.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Next up, Kokkola acquired The Secret World of Briar Rose, a YA fantasy novel by YouTuber Cindy Pham. In this queer Sleeping Beauty retelling, a cynical thief and her sister travel inside the dreams of a cursed princess. As they explore a lush world fueled by imagination, they suspect the princess is hiding darker secrets behind her perfect paradise, and that there are some things their subconscious can't bury forever. Publication is set for 2026. It does not say, but I do follow Cindy on YouTube. She's actually one of my favorite booktubers, and I believe she said it comes out in January. I don't know if that's like the early release date with like the special sprayed edges, and if like the normal versions are coming out later, but really excited for this book, actually, because I know that Cindy has been working on it for a very, very long time. And I know that it's like also very personal, because it kind of goes into suicidal ideation, and it's something that she went through. It's like passive suicidal ideation, because it's like you think about, oh, okay, what if I like never woke up? And that's pretty much Sleeping Beauty, right? So Sleeping Beauty, but make it dark and depressing, but also sapphic, because this is a sapphic book as well.
Yeah, I'm also a sucker for just like dreamscapes. Like ever since watching like Eternal Sunshine, I've just been really loved like people's take on like what dreams look like, what traveling dreamscape might feel like. So I'm definitely excited about that aspect of the book as well. Personally, it took me a while, because I don't think I ever clocked that the name of Sleeping Beauty is Briar Rose. And maybe this is because I haven't watched Sleeping Beauty, the Disney film, since I was like,
I don't know,
a child.
If it's Briar Rose only in the Disney version. I mean, her name is Aurora.
That's
but
true.
Like Briar Rose, like I wonder if that's only in the film version. Who knows? But Sleeping Beauty in the original Grimm fairy tale is not super happy.
Grimm's fairy tales notoriously known for being not super happy, right?
Yeah. So there's a lot of like dark undertones there. So it is a pretty good canvas for a dark retelling.
Yeah. Yeah, well, congrats to Cindy on the upcoming release. Okay, next up, Avery Hill Press has bought world rights to Born, a YA graphic novel by debut author Sarah Ling. In this science fiction adventure set in a world where everyone is a clone, a baby is born for the first time in 6,000 years, and Finn's decision that she has to find it sets into motion events that change everything. Publication is scheduled for fall 2027.
You know what this reminds me of?
Children of Man.
Aeon Flux.
Okay. So it's similar vibes, I guess.
Yeah. Because Aeon Flux also was a story where everybody is a clone and they haven't fixed like the fertility crisis in that story until they do. And that's like a whole thing, because it disrupts the infrastructure that the politicians have set in place for the clones. So,
yeah.
Anyway.
I wonder what kind of like sci-fi aesthetic this is going to be, right? Is this going to be like utopia with a dark underbelly, or is this going to be like Blade Runner, Children of Man, right? Type of thing.
Yeah. Like Hideo Kojima with like the baby in, yeah, in like the jar, and you carry them around. And yeah.
Yeah.
For the people who are not video gamers out there. What is the game called?
Death Stranding. No. Death Stranding. Yeah.
Yeah. Don't look up Death Stranding. It'll give you nightmares.
But yeah, sounds like an interesting story that I am eager to learn more about. So congrats to Sarah on her book deal.
All right. Next up, Delacorte Press acquired at auction The Fallen Sun by C.M. Bosma. Inspired by Middle Eastern folklore and Lebanese culture, the fantasy duology follows a girl trapped on an island annexed by war who escapes to join an underground rebellion against the human king who has been stripping her people of their magic for the last century. Publication for the first book is slated for summer 2027.
Yeah, always love a good revolution story, especially in fantasy.
It makes me wonder. So it says rebellion against the human king. So is the main character and her people not humans? And if so, are we kind of going like the Avatar route? Avatar, the James Cameron route, not Avatar the Last Airbender.
Maybe without the Dancing with Wolves storyline. Like, you know, yeah. we don't need the human person coming to the non-human place and being more non-human than they are. Like, I think, you know, hopefully they don't have that trope in there. But definitely like a story about like maybe they can also all just be human. But because they're not sure. The same human, they're seen as non-human, right? Like, there's a lot of...
Yeah, because they have magic. So it's like, okay, but how do you strip people of their magic? Is it kind of like the Golden Compass? I'm pulling in a lot of different references. So
yeah, but you know, that's to say, this is like a timeless trope, especially for fantasy. And especially like the added elements of, you know, it utilizing Middle Eastern folklore and Lebanese culture to, you know, take us to a fantasy setting that, you know, we're not as familiar with. So yeah, congrats to CM Basma for their book deal. All right, next up, Random House Graphic has acquired Yong Chan's YA contemporary fantasy romance webtoon, Swimming Lessons for a Mermaid. Choa is a mermaid with a unique problem. She can't swim. Feeling like a fish out of water among the waves, she trades her tail for a pair of human legs. But when the handsome star of the high school swim team discovers her secret, he offers her an incredible opportunity, free swimming lessons. The first volume is set for publication in spring 2027.
So I've noticed this trend of publishing houses, their graphic novel imprints, picking up more and more webtoons, which is great because webtoons, they're usually just like one author, one illustrator, and it's usually like independently printed. So it's nice that like those stories are getting picked up for traditional publication.
So would this be like a, like, you know how they do in manga, which is like, chapters are published every week on a weekly, and then there's like the consolidated like omnibus volume for like
so this is kind of what they did with Lore Olympus, which is another webtoon, and they have volumes, so they'll like consolidate like a bunch of chapters into one volume. I have seen Swimming Lessons for a Mermaid kind of floating around on Webtoon, like webtoons.com. And I've never read it. So maybe this will finally get me to start reading it.
Yeah. Speaking of pandemic, I read so many Webtoons during the pandemic just because like there's really nothing else to do. I did fall down a big old, what's the word? Black hole? Sinkhole?
Rabbit hole?
Rabbit hole. That's what I'm thinking of. Yeah. During that time. So definitely excited to see, because yeah, like you mentioned, a lot of these webtoon creators are, you know, they're doing it. You know, we talked to Dami Lee like very early on in this podcast, and she's a webtoon. She had a very long running webtoon on Webtoon. And I think the opportunity to get their work outside of like the app ecosystem into like actual publishing, that's pretty cool for these artists.
Yeah, and a lot of these webtoons are made into like K-dramas, and you know, like I think like The First Night with the Duke is being made into a K-drama right now, and it's like one of my favorite webtoons, so I'm kind of stoked for it, but also very nervous because I'm like, what if they do a bad job? Because they have done bad jobs with webtoon adaptions, but also they've done really good jobs. Like Miseng was a webtoon adaptation, and that's like one of the best K-dramas in like 2010s history.
They've also been doing anime adaptations of webtoons as well. Like,
that's true. Dark Moon is also going to be made into an anime. So it is a great time for webtoon creators, and I'm just so glad that they're getting their flowers now.
Yeah.
All right, next up, Coca-Cola bought world rights to Who the Flan Am I by Kira Wright Ruiz and Claudia Lam. The picture book is about one little flan on a quest to learn more about their flancistry by traveling through time to meet their own custard-inspired dishes found in different cultures. Publication is slated for summer 2027. Is flan Spanish?
Yeah, I think it's flan. But I also pronounce this flan.
Yeah, I know. It's my American. Yeah, like, sorry, guys. I've probably butchered it, but...
Is it Spanish or is it French?
Is it French?
Right?
It might be French.
It's European, yeah, for sure. This comes from Europe. But my favorite flan type desserts is actually the Asian version of like the egg pudding.
The Japanese one?
Yeah.
Yeah, the reason why I thought it was Spanish is because I know that it's a really popular dish in like South America. So Argentina, Brazil, and you know, Venezuela. So I'm like, oh, maybe it's like Spanish, because
that is true. Yeah,
Spanish colonial times.
Colonization does spread cultures. Yeah, yeah. And I do love that this is a book that explores maybe not the upside of colonization, but how, you know, how this spread of culture can allow different cultures to have their own spin on things. I think, you know, thinking of other things that this will work for, you know.
I'm just wondering, like, did Asian countries have custard before colonization? Because it's like egg, right?
I don't know if we use cream for desserts until the French came.
Yeah, right? Yeah, because this is a topic that shows up in Bon Appetit, Your Majesty, the K-drama that's on Netflix with Yuna from Girls' Generation. Yeah, because like she realizes that like gochujang, like red pepper flakes and red pepper paste, had not been invented in Korea at that time because
chili peppers came from the New World, right? Is that
Portugal? Portuguese. So they had like red peppers from Portugal from like this one trader that was shipwrecked, and then they thought it was, you know, they thought it was inedible because it was so spicy. So I wonder if it's like one of those things where it's like, oh yeah, like we didn't use cream for our desserts, but once it came to our country, it was like all bets are off. We're putting it in everything for our desserts.
Yeah. And you know, some also is like, you know, when the Europeans came to colonize the East, they wanted to eat their food, so they trained our bakers to make their breads and stuff, and then we learned how to make it better.
I mean, recently Japan beat France in like the global pastry competition that happens every year, so I'm like, like we do be cooking better desserts than you guys.
And that's why there's a Korean bakery called Paris Baguette.
Paris Baguette is great. There's one nearby my house and I go like once a week because the pastry is actually very good.
Yeah. All right. Our next book deal, Scholastic acquired North American rights to The Missing Magic of Sparrow Shaw, an illustrated debut middle grade novel by Leia Hamm, in which a young mage faces up to society's high expectations when she joins the highly competitive Zenith Academy, a school for gifted children in a world where magic diminishes with age and people will go to terrifying lengths to keep it. Publication is slated for summer 2026.
Oh, I do love this idea that the magic diminishes as you age. Because that's like imagination, hope, your limberness. Everything degrades as you get older.
Your sense of whimsy.
Yeah.
Yeah. And definitely like, you know, the older generation probably doing some heinous things to the younger generation to steal and to maintain their power.
Yeah, it sounds really fun. And I do love an academy book. I do love magical schools and military space, like, academies.
I feel like we need more of these to give us more options because, you know, I can't tell me how many people are asking me if I'm going to get my children that certain, you know, series that is kind of out of vogue these days. And I'm like, I don't need to because I have all these other options that can give them that do the job just as well.
Yeah. All right. Next up, Random House Studio bought in a preempt Lisa Chow's debut author illustrated picture book, Bear Wakes Up. A bear wakes early from hibernation, sees a world that looks nothing like the one he knows, and does what anyone does when confronted with a new and shocking situation. He panics. Publication is slated for fall 2026. Sometimes I feel like I'm a bear that has woken up early from hibernation and the world is on fire. And I'm like, how do I put myself back to sleep?
My son does this every night when he wakes up in his crib and realizes he's not on my arms anymore and freaks out. So I totally understand where this bear is coming from.
Yeah. But this sounds really, really cute. And yeah. Also, yeah, it. A panic bear sounds pretty fun, too.
Yeah, and it's, at least the impression it gives, it'll teach our kids some coping skills, hopefully. And so definitely something that I will read to my children to help them learn how to, you know, cope with change.
Yeah.
All right, next up, Mischief Books has bought world rights to Betty Chang's debut, Frankie Liu's Summer of No Regrets. Pitched as Better Than the Movies meets Love Boat Taipei, the book features a teen girl whose summer famcation, helping out at her grandparents' bao store in Taipei, takes an unexpected turn when she's forced to ask her annoying childhood rival to help her catch the eye of her lifelong crush. Publication is slated for fall 2026.
Yeah, when you go back to your grandparents' place, you're not a tourist. You are extra hands for manual labor.
You know, I was always lucky that, like, by the time, because I'm the second youngest in my generation. So by the time I was born and was visiting my grandparents in Taiwan, they were already retired. So I didn't need to, you know, help out at any store or anything. But there is a really good bao store near my grandparents' house that I miss every day. Like, I haven't been able to find any bao in the States to, like, that compares to, like, the veggie baos from this place.
Yeah, but this does remind me of Love Boat Taipei. You know, coming of age, love in, like, Taiwan.
Yeah.
You know, like, it is giving me those vibes. So it does sound like something that I would enjoy reading.
Yeah, definitely sounds like a great summer read. And, you know, I haven't been to Taiwan since the pandemic. And by the looks of things, I probably won't be back for at least another couple years. But definitely looking forward to, like, more stories to remind me of those summer vacation vibes. So congrats to Betty on her debut.
All right. So our final book deal is Random House Graphic acquired I Shall Master This Family, a Korean YA courtly intrigue and royal romance graphic novel series by Kim Roa, Mon, and Ant Studio. Ferentia has been forced to watch as her noble family is led to ruin by her nefarious relatives. However, she's given a second chance after she wakes up as her six-year-old self, following what should have been a fatal accident. To save her house from its downfall, she'll need to climb the social ranks and become the master of her family. The first volume is set for fall 2026.
All right, so this is one of the webtoons that I read a lot during the pandemic. It's still ongoing to today. And it's like, what they don't tell you, it's also an isekai. Like, this person was reincarnated into Ferentia after dying in the real world, and then dies again after one life. So this is actually her third life that she's living.
She's like a cat.
Yeah. but it's a really fun story. It's a very, like, it's, there's certain genres of, like, these types of, like, isekai webtoon or, like, reincarnation webtoons. And this one definitely falls under, like, the, let's do, like, economic politics.
Yeah. And I do love, like, I don't know if time travel is part of the story, but I do love, like, they screwed me over in my last life. I will take revenge in this life. I will take control over my destiny. This is a time travel fix it. And I do love that trope.
And definitely this series has one of the best dads in, like, webtoon, in the webtoon canon. Like, people love Ferentia's dad. Like, he is just a walking green flag and he must be protected at all costs.
Is this one of those webtoons that has music when you, like, scroll through?
Some
webtoons have, like, soundtracks and, like, GIFs that, like, animate.
Not this one. Reading. Yeah, this one, I think it's currently localized under Tapas, which does not do, like, those multimedia webtoons.
I see.
Yeah, I think the only one that does that I follow is the Line Webtoon app.
Webtoon, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
It gets very confusing because it's literally called Webtoon. And it's like, are you talking about, like, Webtoon with a lowercase or a capital? W. So
it is interesting because like the actual webcomic is actually, I think it's currently like chapter like 200 something. Like it's been like ongoing for at least the last like 3-4 years. But I do feel like it's such a well-beloved story that there are plenty of people who want to own it in print when it comes out.
Yeah. And, you know, like if you have like beautiful artwork, it's nice to have that like crisp, you know, printed pages. Like the colors come more alive when it's in physical form.
Yeah.
All right. So that is the end of our book deals. We have two pieces of news that we will go over. So the first piece of news is the 2025 finalists for the National Book Awards were announced earlier this week, and the winners will be announced on November 19th in New York.
Yeah, always exciting to see like our Asian authors as finalists for these awards. You know, we're definitely rooting for them. But so let's quickly run down the finalists for each category. So for Best Fiction, we have The True Story of Raja the Gullible and His Mother by Rabi Alameddine, which is a tragic comic love story that tells the tale of a Lebanese son and mother across 6 decades, spanning from the Lebanese Civil War to the COVID-19 pandemic. Also nominated is A Guardian and a Thief by Megha Majumdar, set over the course of 1 week in a near future Kolkata devastated by food insecurity and climate change. The novel follows two families and the extraordinary lengths they go to protect their children.
And for Best Nonfiction, we have Things in Nature Merely Grow by Yi-Yun Lee. And in her memoir, the novelist reflects on the loss of her son, James, the second child she had lost to suicide. And for the category of Best Poetry, we have Becoming Ghost by Kathy Lin Che. Kathy Lin Che's sophomore poetry collection is about her parents' experiences as refugees who escaped the Vietnam War and then were cast as extras in Francis Ford Coppola's film Apocalypse Now, placing them at the margins of their own story.
Oof. And finally, for Best Translated Literature, we have We Computers, a Ghazal novel by Hamid Ismailov, translated from Uzbek by Shelley Fairweather Vega. In the late 1980s, French poet and psychologist Jean Percet finds himself in possession of one of the most promising inventions of the century, a computer. Enchanted by snippets of Persian poetry he learns from his Uzbek translation partner, Abdulhamid Ismail, Jean Percet builds a computer program capable of both analyzing and generating literature.
So those were the finalists of Asian Descent for the National Book Awards. There are other nominees, everyone. But we are an Asian and Asian American book podcast, so we are spotlighting authors of Asian descent.
These are the ones we're rooting for. Yeah.
Yeah. But if you want to see the full list, go to the National Book Awards website. And I believe the New York Times also has a full list. Yeah. And for our final piece of news, so the novel Alchemized by Sen Lin Yu debuted at number one on the New York Times hardcover fiction list on October 12th. And I believe that it is still ranked number one at this point.
Yeah.
And the premise of the book is Alchemized follows Helena Marino, an alchemist and healer who fought in the resistance before she was captured by necromancers when they defeated the rebels. Helena can't remember the months before her imprisonment, leading up to the final battle, which alarms the necromancers. She is then sent to the High Reeve, known as one of the most powerful and ruthless necromancers in the new regime. So Alchemized actually is based on a fan fiction that Sen Lin Yu, which is their pen name on AO3, they published under the same name. It's based on their Hermione Draco fanfiction, Manacled. And Manacled also drew inspiration from Margaret Atwood's The Handmaid's Tale. So it is a dark romance fantasy novel. And the fanfiction had over 16 million downloads on AO3. And I'm someone who is pretty like in the know when it comes to fan fiction, and I have heard of Manacled.
I learned about this book on the internet, and that's when I learned about the Draco Hermione ship name, which is Dramini.
Dramini, yeah.
Are you a Dramini fan? Is that like one of your ships?
It is one of my ships, but not for the reason that people might think. obviously, like, okay, so like Senlin Yu is a non-binary author, and Manacled came out before J.K. Rowling became like very vocal about her anti-trans agenda. So that's why like the original fanfic didn't really address any of that. And Senlin Yu has said in interviews that they are not okay with the way J.K. Rowling has been against the LGBTQ community. But aside from that, I like Draymione because of the sheer number of fics that are available under that ship. The more fics that are under a ship, it means that there's more chances of quality fics. And there's actually three other Draymione fanfiction that got published last year or this past year, and they also reached the New York Times bestseller list. And I actually read those two Draymione fics. So, when good writing is good writing, and if they can make it into an original tale and like remove all the IP from their characters and it's still a good story, then yeah, like,
yeah, go ahead. I mean, don't underestimate the power of a smart girl and a boy she can fix.
This is not that story. I will give trigger warnings for people. Alchemized is dark romance. So there is like mentions of torture. There's like graphic violence. In the original, there was sexual assault. So this is not like a good time, happy book. It is about trauma and PTSD and what happens to prisoners of war. Mm. And it is a very heavy read. And I say that quite literally because it has an over 1,000 page count. So it is a freaking tome. And the fact that Penguin Random House like printed that many copies for it to reach the New York Times bestsellers list means that they had so much faith in this book. It is crazy. And I mean, they were right too. It was like, it was their most pre-ordered debut of the year. And recently Legendary bought movie rights to Alchemized, and it was allegedly for 7 figures, according to the Hollywood Reporter. So
yeah, get that bag.
There's a lot of, yeah, like I'm really glad for Senlin Yu because I'm always really happy for fanfic authors who make it to traditional publishing, because writing is such, like, writing fan fiction is like a passion project, and the only thing that you get in return is like fan enthusiasm. So for them to actually get like monetary success off of their writing is great. Also, yeah. People demean fanfic writers saying that they're not actual writers. And I'm like, that's not true. They are very creative.
Yeah. Some of our favorite reads over the course of this podcast come from people who cut their teeth doing fanfic. And I think, you know, any way you can get training to learn about how story, how characters, how to write to themes, I think in a world where not everyone gets the opportunity to, it's definitely a place for people to get their practice in as well.
I know that Manacled is no longer on AO3 because that's one of the conditions that you sign to when you have like a fanfic that is going to be traditionally published. So the original text is no longer there, but there's a lot of people who have saved it on internet archives and there are people who have printed the original fanfic and binded it into books in their own homes. But I would suggest, hey, read Alchemized. Don't read Manacled first, because I've heard from book reviewers that it was really hard for them to separate the two because the story is very emotionally traumatizing. So I think your mind just like goes back to when you first read it and were first traumatized, so it's really hard for them to like to remove themselves from that experience.
Yeah.
That's my tip. I have never read Manacled. I never planned to read Alchemized because dark romance is just not my thing. I'm kind of squeamish, so I guess this is just a hot book talk book that I will never be able to talk to people about because it, I kind of feel left out because a lot of like bookfluencers I know and follow have read this book and are like now posting their reviews. And I'm like, not part of the party. I feel left out.
It is a hard, like it is a commitment to read this book. Apparently 1,000 pages is no, especially based on the number of books we read per month for this podcast alone. Like, you know, I understand. I give you permission to take it easy.
There are people who have read this in one night and I'm like, how? It must be that good that they were able to focus for that long.
But congrats to Sendlin Yu on the success of the book. And, you know, definitely looking forward to maybe this will be another book where I will just watch the movie.
I don't think I want to watch a visual representation of all the trauma that is in the text. I just feel really bad. It's just one of those, it has like the trigger warnings that I am just like, nope, not even going to go there. So,
yeah.
But for the people who are planning to pick it up and read it, I hope you guys have a good time.
Yeah. All right. And with that, that'll do it for our October 2025 mid-month book news check-in. Thanks again, Rira, for collecting all of our publishing and book news. And I guess before we call it an episode, just a quick reminder that our October 2025 book club pick is Bat Eater and Other Names for Cora Zhang by Kylie Lee Baker, which is a horror thriller about a woman who works as a crime scene cleaner in New York Chinatown, dealing with the aftermath of her sister's brutal murder during the pandemic. And just a quick, you know, warning again that this book does feature scenes of gore and violence. So definitely tread carefully if you are a squeamish reader. This book was a patron's choice. So definitely thanks to our Honeybone members for selecting this book for us. And I look forward to discussing this with you, Rira, at the end of the month. And you know, for those of you reading along with us, we are discussing this book in real time on our Discord. So if you are a patron supporter, definitely share your thoughts there. And if you're not on our Patreon, you can also share your thoughts about the book with us on Goodreads. As always, we'd love to include your feedback on our discussion episodes whenever possible. But yeah, with that, that'll do it for this episode of Books and Boba. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you all next time. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to Books and Boba. This podcast was hosted by Marvin Yue and Rira Yu and edited and produced by Marvin Yue. Follow the book club on Twitter and Instagram by going to @booksandboba and engage with us on Goodreads on our Goodreads group. You can also check out past episodes of the podcast by going to booksandboba.com and by subscribing to us on your favorite podcast app. Don't forget, you can support Books and Boba and Asian American authors by purchasing books at our bookshop.org account. Check out the link in our show notes and also at booksandboba.com. Books and Boba is a proud member of the Potluck Podcast Collective, a collective of Asian American hosted podcasts featuring unique voices and stories from the Asian diaspora. Learn more about the collective and check out our fellow Potluck shows by visiting the website podcastpotluck.com. Thanks for listening.
Hungry for spicy food and even hotter conversations? Craving community and authentic storytelling? Then join the table. This is Minor Legends, a new comedy fiction podcast supported by Potluck. Pull up every week with me, Angela Wong Carbone, and follow the stories of me and my friends as we serve up tasty tales of what it means to be Asian American at our weekly dinner hang. If you enjoy deep dishing on absurd stereotypes like tiger moms who tutor your dating game rather than grades, the insanity of your parents' immigration story, to the legend of that one good Asian cousin you can never live up to, then pull up a seat and grab a plate. Featuring dinner guests like Ronnie Chang, Brian Park, Usama Siddiqui, Celia Au, Perry Young, Supriya Ganesh, and more. It's a tasty rotation that'll leave you belly laughing and steeped in relatable and spicy conversations. Can you take the heat? Listen now for free wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, sports fans. Welcome to Asians in Hockey. You may not realize it, but there's a rich history of Asians and AAPI folks who have contributed to the legacy of the greatest game on ice. From classic legends like Julie Chu and Robin Bawa to current greats like Lia Lum and Nick Suzuki, and even rising stars like Akane Shiga and Jason Robertson. We'll cover their stories, celebrate their accomplishments, and learn about their impact on the sport of hockey. I'm Nate Nakao, former Beer League player, occasional youth hockey coach, and longtime hockey fan, and I'll be your host as we take a look at the rise of Asians in hockey. Subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Pocket Casts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Part of the Potluck Podcast Collective.